if you're just starting to write poetry, my advice is do whatever you feel like, but trust yourself.
Welcome to Angle on Writing, a podcast about writing, publishing, and book marketing. Welcome, writers. Today I am with a very prolific poet, Poet Laureate Emeritus of Santa Barbara, and a multi-award winner. Welcome, Perry Longo.
Thank you, Lisa. That's a very positive introduction. Thank you.
What drew you to poetry?
I have just finished writing a talk about that. I have to give a keynote speech for the Poetry Therapy Association National Conference next month in April. And my whole talk is kind of about that. What drew me to poetry was actually my family, particularly my father. When I was very little, he would bounce me on his knee as I was going off to bed, but not before he recited the whole poem of "Listen, My Child, and You Should Hear the Midnight Ride" of Paul Revere. He had the whole thing memorized. And I would bounce on his lap to the rhythm and the music of "Listen, My Child, and You Shall Hear the Midnight Ride" of Paul Revere. And he also wrote poetry. And so what he wrote poems for all of us when we were born, and then oftentimes in our birthdays, and then for my mother, if they had spats or she got off on one of her, things, he'd write her a love poem, and then they would kiss and make up. And I thought, oh, that's really nice. This poetry stuff is pretty good. So I just have always written poetry. Started up, I used to write little rhymey things for my little brother, which were very insulting. But it's just something I started doing. In fourth grade, the teacher would give us writing time on Friday at 2 o'clock or 2:15, and the school got out at 2:45. She wouldn't give any directions for poetry or writing. She'd say, "This is free writing time. Write whatever you want." That was it. And I remember one day, and this was a Catholic school, so it was a nun, and she leaned over me, and she had this big black veil, and she looked at what I had written, and she said, "You really have a way with words." And I've never forgotten that. And then one thing led to another, and then I, majored in English in college, and sent poems in. I remember I sent poems to the Atlantic Monthly. Then they published. They had a contest for college kids, and I actually won an award from them. And then, I just wrote to survive. I just liked to write, and I wrote to figure things out and express my joy, my angst, my whatever. And I didn't really take it up formally until I moved to LA after college and had a job teaching school. And then I would go in the evening, I'd go out to the coffee shops, which was very popular, and just read poems. And that's kind of how I got to know a lot of poets in Los Angeles. And then I met my husband, and then we moved to Santa Barbara. And then I inherited two stepsons who were very little because their mother died. And then I had two of my own children. So I put poetry aside, but I would write at night, like after everybody went to bed. And that was my solace. And I would just write for myself. And that was my happiest, restful time of day. Then I decided to come to the writers' conference. So I came to the writers' conference. I can't remember what year. I have been teaching the facilitating the poetry group at the writers' conference. This will be my 42nd year. So when I first start, how I ended up doing it is I went to this is way back, if you know, what did I say, 42 years ago. I went to Marilee Zdenek's class. It was Right Brain and Poetry. And I got the poetry award. And then I also entered a poem in the contest and I got an award for that. So about 2 months later, Paul Lazarus called me and he said, the Writers' Conference people want to have just a poetry group class, not right brain poetry. Would you be willing to take it on? We'd love to have you. And I said, oh, I'm not famous enough. I know some poets in LA maybe who would be better. And they said, no, people liked you just fine. We think you should do it. So here I am, 42 later, talking to you.
Yeah, 42 years. That's a lot. That was back in 1984. Wow.
That's right, 1984.
Yeah. So that's a long time. So you have had a lot of students come in and out of your workshop. And I know back in the 80s, and 90s, they had a lot of well-known writers come through the conference. And I know you've told some stories about that. Do you have any favorite stories?
Well, you mentioned one writer that you heard on the email the other day, whose name is slipping my mind right now. Ray Bradbury. Did you say
Yes.
Ray Bradbury? Yes, Ray Bradbury, who was a rhymer, and I'm not a rhymer. I mean, I can do rhyme if I have to, but I'm not basically a rhymer. Ray Bradbury comes to the workshop, you know, to the workshop, and in those years we were in the basement of the Miramar. And I think this was about the third year he came that I was there. I know he'd been coming since the beginning of time. But he came in, and there were about 40 people because in those years, there was just the one morning workshop, which I did. What happened is that it drew so many people that after a while they put in the afternoon workshop. And I can't remember who first taught the afternoon workshop, but I always did the morning workshop. So he comes to the workshop and he listens to people's poems and some of my comments and their comments. He said, well, I see a problem here. And I said, well, yeah, really? What's that? And he said, nobody rhymes. Poetry has to rhyme. He wrote poetry and he was a very tight rhymer. All of his poems wrote. I said, well, thank you for your feedback, Mr. Bradbury. That's good to know that you feel that way. And I've told some of the students already I'm not too good on rhyming, or I don't care for rhyming personally that much. So maybe you would like to hear someone else's poem that rhymes, and then you could comment on that. He said, I'd really rather read my own. And so I said, well, that's a very good idea. Why don't you read some of yours? So he was, Ray Bradbury liked to be the star.
Yes, I'm sure he did. But the so you don't rhyme in your poetry much, and then but some people do, and so there's all sorts of you when you're teaching, you do encourage people to explore different ways of writing poetry.
Well, it's not that I don't like rhyme. I mean, I've studied poets from the beginning of time, and poetry always rhymed until you got into the late 20s, and we started being influenced by some of the European poets more who didn't rhyme so much. Phil Levine also came to one of my workshops, and Phil had a brother who lived in Los Angeles, and so his brother talked him into being one of the keynote speakers at the conference. And then Phil very nicely came into my workshop. And I chose a couple of the people who were, pretty good poets. It's not that I don't like rhyme. I like rhyme done well. I love rhyme when it's done well, but we don't live in a culture that rhyme is the regular thing. Free verse is more the writing. So people are more familiar with reading free verse. In the days that people rhymed, which was all the time, that's what people did. It was the culture, and we had a different language. Today, our language is different, and our language changes constantly. So language, poetry and language are very much a part of each other. And so if you're going to go, I'm going to write about the sky, and by my love came by, and it's just like, I don't need that. If you're going to rhyme, do slant rhyme or do off rhymes or do, but use your own voice. So I'm most interested in whatever people write. There's all kinds of form poems that are written, and those are some of those are wonderful. People are still writing them, but as you say, there's all different ways of writing. What I don't like when people make comments in group is in a group setting, is people give suggestions for other people's poems, and what they tend to do is give suggestions is how they would say it, and it's not in the voice of the person who just read the poem. So what workshop leaders in poetry now do is we say, if it were my poem, I would say, what does that make you think of for yourself? Or can you think of another way you would say this particular line, which feels a little awkward, but maybe say it in your words. So I always go after their words, their voice, how they would do it. And then I always say, anytime anybody makes a suggestion, you can take it and put it, in the garbage can, or you can mull it. I have done that so often. I've been in workshops my whole life and had my things edited too, all the time. And so many times somebody has said, I don't think you need that last line. And I go, oh, well, I think I need it, or I'll keep my mouth shut and then, decide I'm going to keep it. And lo and behold, 3 days later, a week later, I go, they're right. And so I always tell people, just let it mull for a while. And it doesn't mean you're a bad poet when people give you suggestions or it's not good.
Yeah, I do that, with fiction. I would write down every, all the things that people said. I would make notes, and then but I would know by where I wrote it on my little notepad or how I wrote it on my notepad, which suggestions I would really take note of, and what suggestions are like they don't know.
Right.
And I like where you're talking about how there's the different types of poetry and stuff. And I know mainly I've written some poems myself, but mainly they're kind of on the kind of a gateway more to comedy. And instead of real poetry. And I know that you said that even Jonathan Winters had visited your workshop.
And he was one of the big surprises. And I mean, I think he was, well, Phil Levine, of course, was great. But what I loved about Jonathan Winters is he didn't come into the workshop, and his daughter used to come to my workshop all the time. And he didn't come to the workshop to make funny. He came into the workshop very serious. And he said he had a lot of things he wanted to write about. And I always do some writing exercises and give prompts. And he was very, very positive about the poetry workshop itself, the poems, his own writing. It showed me a side of Jonathan Winters I had never seen before, and I don't think I've ever seen it since. Because then he'd leave the workshop, and then we'd all go off and have lunch at the dining car. That's, when it was at the Miramar, and he'd crack up jokes one after another. But he was very serious about the poetry. He loved it. And he supported his daughter, Lucinda, writing.
Have any of your children gone into the poetry writing area?
My daughter, when she was in elementary school and high school, wrote poetry. She was fabulous. Her use of language and how she wrote was off the charts. But she had a boyfriend who told her she really shouldn't pay so much attention to words. She should be a scientist. And so she stopped writing. And to this day, she doesn't write very much, except maybe privately. She's done a lot of journal writing, but she kind of let it drop. But maybe on the side without telling me she does. I have a funny story about my son. I used to volunteer in his classroom to do poetry when he was in grade school. And so he knew about writing poetry. And so anyway, he's in law school and he's taking a summer school class. This is about, I don't know, he's been a lawyer for 20 years, so it was probably about 25 years ago or so. And the teacher gave them all an assignment. He was training them to be trial lawyers. He gave everybody an assignment to write a poem and hand it in for homework. So my son goes back to class the next morning, and the teacher gets up and he says, "Who's Dana Longo?" And Dana raises his hand and he says, "Mr. Longo, would you please come up to the front of the class and read your poem? It's a wonderful poem." And Dana goes, "No, I don't think so. I'm not going to," because it was a big class, I don't know, there were about 100 people in there. He said, "Well, it would be really great if you would read it," he said, "and I'd like to know where you learned to write poetry." And he said, my son said, "All I said was, it's a really long story." I always used to kid him that my teaching, I taught poetry in the schools for 25 years, and I always kidded my son that don't knock poetry, it put you through law school.
Yes. And so he did that as an assignment.
As an
And
assignment in law school when he was about, I don't know, in his middle 20s. Yeah, so, but he doesn't write poetry anymore.
I know that you are no stranger to having, because you have had to serve as a, you got the privilege of serving as a poet laureate. And doing all sorts of events and being called on to write poetry about every little thing, almost probably, was how was that?
I actually loved it. I consider it a privilege and an honor to be a poet laureate, and I liked serving my community in that way. But some of the assignments were, I mean, usually when you get an assignment, it opens up a gateway into something you would never write about. One of my funniest stories, without it using any names, it was City Council wanted a poem for the new year for their first January meeting. And the person who asked me to do it asked me this on December 23rd. And she wanted a poem for January 3rd or something like that. I said, "Oh, I really need a little more time because I have to mull this," because I didn't know what she wanted it about or anything. She just wanted a poem for the January, whatever. And I said, "Yeah, I could use a little more time." She said, "Oh, just make it a haiku." Now, you have to understand haiku to know that Basho in the early 1800s, I think, or late 1700s, spent his life writing haiku. That's all he did. And on his deathbed, he said, I did not live as I wanted to live. All I ever wanted to do was write one good haiku, and I haven't done it. And he died. And Basho, of all people, hundreds of poems published by Basho, who's considered the great haiku writer from whom all other haiku writers have followed. He was feeling bad about his own writing, that who knows what he wanted himself to do or be. But anyway, that's Basho.
But so you, I'm sure that a lot of people have found this very interesting and inspiring and want to go to your workshop. But do you have any advice for people who maybe won't be able to come to your workshop? Do you have any advice for aspiring poets?
Well, that's a very good question. I would say one of the main things is don't worry about winning the Pulitzer Prize with your poem. Don't worry about competing with any other poet that you know. Believe in yourself that you have a right to write, and that people have been writing poetry from the beginning of time. It was the first language. Going back to the beginning of time, people did chants around the fireplace and they wrote group poems together. I've done, which you may or may not know, for 35, 40 years, I've been conducting poetry writing workshops for Sanctuary House, which is a place of healing. And people come into that workshop and they've never written poetry, or if they did, they did it in high school and got an F on it. That's another thing. You never grade poetry, when you're just starting to write. When I did Poets in the Schools, I told the teachers, no judgment. We don't correct poems. And that was something at Sanctuary, and I do groups now, weekly groups at hospice. And a lot of them haven't written a poem since grade school, or never, or they don't even like poetry. So, what I do is I bring in a poem that has fresh language, but not complicated language, but has a lot of feeling in it. And I have people talk about a line or two in the poem that gets them in the gut. And to write that line down, and then just reflect on it in their own words. And instead of going across the whole page, just write down in a column, or give it a shape as you kind of write. Because what's wonderful about poetry is it's contained, it's like a container. So if you're writing something that has a lot of feeling in it, there's something psychological that we know. Well, if I write whatever I feel inside, I won't run off the page. I won't disappear because it's in a container. So a poem is a container of feeling. And so I often just start people off that way. I just wrote a little article about that, and I was telling in the article I mentioned this little I had this little boy in second grade. This is some years ago. I didn't know at the time he was dyslexic, but it was a first class, second grade. They've never written poetry. They probably never even read much poetry. So I brought in this book, Wishes, Lies, and Dreams by Kenneth Koch. Kenneth Koch started Poets in the Schools back in New York many years ago. So he has this wonderful book of ideas for teachers for poetry. So he'll bring in he publishes a classic poem that's known, in literature as a classic poem. And then he has kids write about, say, where do you find yourself in that poem? And they say, oh, Well, he's talking about his dog. I have a dog. I love my dog. And so he'll say, well, write about your dog. Tell me your dog's name. Tell me what you like about your dog. I have kids write such wonderful poems about things that they do, about baseball and about this and about that. Anyway, so this little boy, he's kind of befuddled by the whole thing. And this particular day, it was only the second class, and there was a substitute teacher in there. So I told the kids, well, instead of worrying all the way across your page, the trick about writing poetry is it can look like you're writing a really long poem, but actually write the whole poem in just one line. You can just take a line and just write it in one line. Now, you can do that, or you can write in a circle, or you can write in a slant, or any way you want. So, everybody's going, and they're writing away. They already, love that idea about writing in a column or writing, in a slant or a circle. They think that's really fun. So all of a sudden, I heard this little boy crying from across the room. But she told us we could do it any way we wanted. And he's pointing at me like the villain, right? So I go over and I say, well, what's the problem here? And the substitute teacher says, well, he can't write that way. I said, well, let's see what you do, what you did here. So here's the poem. A long, skinny poem, but it goes from the bottom up. And the poem goes, my poem goes the way a tree grows. Is that brilliant or is that brilliant?
Oh,
I'm sitting
wow.
there like having a nervous breakdown at the genius of this kid. So I said to the substitute teacher, it's a brilliant poem. It's okay. You can go to the teacher's lounge and rest. I'll manage the class. You could go. And I have never forgotten that.
Do you know whatever happened to that kid?
I don't know what happened to the kid. When the teacher, regular teacher, was back the next day, we met in the morning in the teacher's lounge before we went into class. She said, Perry, he's dyslexic. I have never even gotten him to write his name before. How did you do that? I said, all I said was just write any way you want to, from the bottom up. You can write sideways, you can write on the slant. Another little boy in a class about same grade, this was about two classes later, we were writing poems based on Native American chants. And I was telling them, the world is a circle and we have four directions and it goes around and what happens here happens over there and life is a circle. It's all a circle. And so they went about writing, and I think it was a poem by Joseph Bruschak, a northern New York poet. I can't remember the name of the tribe. And the poem starts with, let my poem be bright with animals. Isn't that a lovely first line? Let my poem be bright with animals. So this little boy writes this poem because he heard me say, well, the world is a circle. It's a circle. It's not a line. It's a circle. We're all related to each other, blah, 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 blah. And here's his, oh, I went over and he was crying. I said, what's the matter? He said, I messed up. Can I have a new paper? I said, of course. Let's see how you messed up. And here was his poem. He'd drawn a circle. He'd cut a line through it. And he'd written, a circle can't do nothing, cut in half. Brilliant. So if you're just starting to write poetry, my advice is do whatever you feel like, but trust yourself that you have something to say because it's inside and nobody can know what it is but you. So basically, you're going inside to that place we're often afraid to go, and a poem brings the inside out. And so a good thing to do is to get a poem that you really like, a poem you've read that you, usually people, if they want to write a poem, it's because they've read some poems they like and they speak to them. I said, get a poem you like, pull out a line that means something to you. Ask yourself what that line means to you, where you live in that poem. You live in another poet's words. And then write what those words mean to you. And I tell you, Lisa, I've never known anybody to not write a poem if they do that.
Yes. And that is another thing that I know that Ray Bradbury actually has said is recommended is read a poem, write a poem every day, but read a poem every day.
Right.
So
Beautiful.
I have subscribed via email to the to get a poem every day. So
What site do you use?
I don't, I think it's the Poetry Magazine one, the
Oh,
Poetry
right.
Foundation.
Poetry Foundation, Poem a
Yeah.
Day.
Yeah.
Yeah. Another wonderful one, and they don't charge you anything. They ask for donations now in a while, but they never, you don't have to give them a donation to get a poem. It's called The Slowdown, Slowdown.
Well, great. That's
The Slowdown.
a good tip. I will check that out because sometimes, whatever they do a some there's a glitch or something, or it's always good to choose from. Maybe read more than one poem a day.
Right. And today on the poet.org, the poem a day is a wonderful short poem by Dorian Laux, Laux. And it's called, it's on my computer. I didn't print it up. But it's about a friend. What Happened to My Friend is the title of the poem. And it's this short, wonderful poem. And then, the poem a day, if you want, you can click on this little arrow. It says, read about this poem. And then she herself talks about the poem, about so much of what is going on politically today. Friends are disappearing. And so the poem is sort of about that. It's a
Oh.
wonderful poem, very short.
Well, that's a great resource, and I know that you're getting ready for your other conference before the Santa Barbara Writers
Right.
Conference.
Yeah, I go in mid-April to Chicago.
Yes.
Yeah.
And that is the
Poetry
poetry.
Therapy, National Association for Poetry Therapy. And people are always asking me the difference between, well, what's the difference between a poet, because I do editing workshops for poetry too. So I do poetry therapy things and then I do pure poetry things. What's the difference? And it's very simple. The poetry workshop is about the poem. What you want to do to make that poem shine as a work of art. A poetry therapy is about the person. So that's the difference. Now, they intersect because it's nice in poetry therapy if you know something about poetry, if you know about voice and you know about music, rhythm, and you know about shape and you know about language and the tools are the same, but the outcome is different. The outcome is you're not doing it to win any prizes. Now, a lot of times, poems written in a poetry therapy context are wonderful poems, and they end up getting somebody else to edit them, and send them in, and so it's two different, two very different things, two different hats, but they borrow the same tools.
Yes. Well, that's good. I thank you. I didn't know about that. And so I appreciate everything, all the stuff that I learned today from you. And I look forward to seeing you in June.
Yes, I look forward to seeing you too.